logo back.
Like you mean like a world map, like for missions?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Corey is video.
Wow. Justin, when you... Yeah.
Let me just FaceTime.
You know, he wants to do Marco Polo.
Marco Polo?
Yeah, let me get my little hole.
I still don't have it yet.
Are they really gonna do video?
I thought Marco Polo was like short class and stuff, but it needs to be lengthy.
Yeah.
Marco Polo would get the president.
President?
Should we do it to the whole group or just to Dustin?
Wow.
Well, I think anybody else will watch if we do the whole group? Maybe. Are you
ready?
How about the pizza?
Yeah.
Do I need volume one? I don't know. I guess.
You just tell me when.
I'll just go ahead and start.
Are we
waiting on Justin?
You want
to
give
us
some
pizza?
I think you
said to go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. Ready?
Set. Okay. So, this is almost all straight lecture mode. So, I mean, this whole class is pretty much a guinea pig of sorts. First time we're doing it, and then also depend on how much time I have on my hands to go beyond Grudem and dig into history and what other men said on these topics and broaden it as put as much much water in the much coffee in the cup as I can. So that being said, we had just started, we were in the doctrine of man, and we had just started man and sin. And, you know, you may say, well, we got a couple of them done, but they were sort of choppy, and we just started. So I went ahead and reset the board and come back to the beginning. And... it's necessary to get it right because what we're dealing with when we deal with the doctrine of sin. By the way, in philosophy, they use the term evil instead of sin. Obviously, they're not thinking theologically. So, problem of sin for thinking theologically, problem of evil for thinking philosophically. But, it's known as the Achilles heel to the Christian faith. I mean, that tells you how many people reject Christianity because of it. So it is very worthy subject to give our minds to best we can to be able to help people as best we can. So, Roman numeral 1, this Grudem crams it all into one chapter. If you read other Reformed theologians, they have maybe 4 or 5 chapters to Grudem's 1. So, you see, I mean, that's why this is called an intro. It's very good, but sometimes Grudem just hydroplanes over what others snorkel in. And, so when we talk about the origin, he only has one letter B there in his chapter on the origin of sin and evil. Other books have whole chapters on it. When they say the origin, what they mean is the word literally means to rise, to flow out of, like a fountain, a point of derivation. What we're asking is where did evil and sin come from? It is, say at the very beginning, an absolute enigma, a complete mystery, unsolvable crossword puzzle. And yet without it, you can't make sense of the world. And if you don't get it right, I mean, completely derail, which is what I hope to show. So, big letter A then is, I just want to go through some. I have seven distinctions, critical distinctions, to be aware of when it comes to sin and evil. And I don't know how many we'll go through. Jump in if you want to. Wait to the end if you want to. I'm just going to go. So the first is logical versus emotional problem of evil. It's something to be aware of. Some people are right in the middle of the emotional problem of evil. The logical problem of evil is what sophomore philosophy students stay up all night talking about. If God is omnipotent, all-powerful, omnibenevolent, all-loving, omniscient, all-knowing, how can there be evil in the world? And there is evil in the world, therefore an omnipotent, omnibenevolent, omniscient God does not exist. So I think it's important for us to bear that in mind when we're talking to someone. John Lennox is professor at Oxford of Mathematics, and he does a great job. If you want to look up some YouTubes or something on him, he's debated Stephen Hawking and those men. He's tremendous intellect. He thinks it's important to bring this out. I think it's beautiful, the emotional problem of evil. He points out to people that only in Christianity does God actually become enmeshed in the problem of evil himself through the incarnation. Incredible thought. So you're always wanting someone who can sympathize with you. Well, in this case, the Creator can sympathize with us. Because on the cross, Jesus asked the question, why? And although he's quoting Psalm 22, I don't think he was acting in his human nature. Somehow he meant it. Somehow. So there is an emotional problem of evil. And the point in pointing it out is we don't want to come at people with the logical answers when they are dealing with it emotionally. And you want to be aware of that. So, you know, and when it comes to the emotional problem of evil, I think the best thing to do is point to the cross. And in the cross, you can let people know that God feels what they feel, and it instills hope because God brought good out of that, you know. Logical problem of evil, if you're dealing with someone that's just wanting to debate and they're not currently in pain and they're just they're dealing with that, obviously you want to go to Rabbi Zacharias, points this out a lot of times. In order to have a problem of evil, assumes an absolute standard of good. And if you got an absolute standard of good, you assume an absolute moral law. You assume an absolute moral lawgiver. You assume the Trinitarian God of Christian theism, where interpersonal ethics exist in the being of God. Without that, you can't have absolute interpersonal ethics. And so therefore, the problem of evil presupposes the existence of God. So it self-destructs. That's basically the answer to that. And so the microphone drops and that's over. number two, so that's a logical and emotional distinction. Number two is natural versus moral origins to evil. Little letter A here would be it cannot arise from God's being because the Creator is to put it in philosophical terms, ontologically incapable of sinning, metaphysically incapable of sinning, naturally, whatever term you want to use, little letter B, it cannot arise from man's being either, because he was created ontologically good. There's nothing, we talk this way a lot, inherently evil. For example, in acts of physical intimacy, those aren't inherently evil. Man having a mind is not an inherently evil thing. Having a will, having emotions, having these things aren't inherently evil, and God made them good. But here's the problem. You remember in the creator-creature distinction, the two levels of reality way earlier on, that those are the only two levels of reality. There's created reality and there's uncreated reality. There's only two levels of reality. But we just said it can't flow. It can't originate. It's not, God is light, and in Him there's no darkness. He can't do wickedness. So how could evil possibly originate in Him? You know, does a pure water send out sewage? But He made man upright, right? Ecclesiastes says, and they have sought out many devices. So it can't arise from the natural physical being of man either. Which is to arrive at a most enigmatic area of theology and philosophy that is going to sound heretical to you, but sin and evil is actually non-existent. It doesn't have... hey, bro. I was just speaking of heresy when you walked in.
I'll continue. I'm glad I got Mr. Ford by the way.
Yeah. When we say exist, I mean, we mean like have existence in itself. So God exists, the world that He made exists, but evil does not flow metaphysically out of the being of God, or metaphysically and naturally out. It doesn't ooze out of God naturally. It doesn't ooze out of man naturally. It's not a chemical. It's not like a thing like flowing through our blood. It's not cheese. It's not some molecule that like passes from me down to my children. And so in the literature you'll find Augustine and Thomas Aquinas used the Latin terms for negation and privation. Negatio and privatio, these two words that describe evil as a lack. As a negative thing. And what they're wrestling with there is it doesn't come inherently out of the Creator. It doesn't come inherently out of the creature. So you have this enigmatic category that in the real sense of the term, evil does not exist. In the real literal sense of what the term exists means. It means evil doesn't have the power of being in itself. Evil is not a being. Which takes me to, which means it, as bad as it sounds, it is right. And if y'all think I've really fallen out of my chair here, almost everyone in the Reformed tradition thinks this way. So if you haven't heard it, you just haven't come across it yet. But It is not a thing in the true sense of the term. But because of that, the reformers, they wanted to add a third Latin word, and we don't talk in Latin anymore, but apparently they did for a long time. Actuoso, which they meant to avoid giving the impression that evil is an illusion. So it doesn't have existence, but it is an actual thing. It's actual. So evil is an actual nothing. That's what it is. It is nothing actually. And what they meant by that, you hear the other word in it, is act. Evil is an act. Evil is an ethical thing. Evil is the misuse of a metaphysical thing. Evil is a misuse of the mind, a misuse of the will, a misuse of the emotions, a misuse of the body, a misuse of a plant, a misuse of an animal. It is the beings that God made being misused. The word depravity itself means to twist, to twist it. So you have a desire for your wife, you know, if you're married. Well, it's that desire is running straight if it's directed toward her. But when it's directed towards someone else, derails, it's twisted. That's depravity, that's sin, it's the misuse. So in other words, sin and evil are moral, not natural. This is the distinction you're making here between natural and moral evil. So when we're asking about the origin of sin, we have to constantly rid ourselves of thinking that we're looking for in nature.
Right.
Everything God created was good. And so it is not, that's what we're saying. There's only two levels of reality. There's only the creator and the creation. And both are good. Both are originally made good. And so evil is ethical. Just lay that down. It's moral. As a matter of fact, all the natural evil in the world, according to Genesis 3 and Romans 8, is caused by moral evil. The creation is resisting our dominion because of moral evil. The ground is cursed because of our sin. In other words, the whole creation is subjected to futility because of our sin. Hurricanes that kill people are because of our sin. All of creation is complete, which is, of course, what Psalm 8 is about, Christ being the new man, regaining dominion. But dominion is out of whack now. So that distinction, natural and moral evil. So we're searching for the question of moral evil. Number three, the creator versus the creature as the moral source of evil. God is immutable and good, and therefore he cannot be the moral source of evil. James says he doesn't sin, and he can't even be tempted. God said, if all the sin were hanging in front of you, and any desire for sin. The creature is mutable, changeable. Inherently, to be a creature is to have the attribute of mutability. So that means there's the possibility of change. When we're in heaven and glorified, the certainty of remaining glorified is not because we'll be beyond the possibility changing. It'd be because God has decided to continuously confirm us in that state. But so that's number three. Number four, the moral will of the creature versus the natural will of the creature. And to give a few statements on this, little letter A, without this distinction, you rob the creature of responsibility, blame the creation, and by extension the creator for sin. So we have to be careful with this reformed word, nature. Jonathan Edwards wrote The Freedom of the Will, and that's where these terms, a lot of them come from. But when he made the distinction clear, more clear than anyone, between moral and natural evil. And when he says man is born a sinner, or man is by nature a sinner, he does not mean by human nature. He means ethical nature. He uses the term nature because it's so fixed and a part of every single person in the way that they act, that he uses the term nature. But don't be confused. Like when Jeremiah says, how can a leopard change its spots? He's using a natural analogy for an ethical reality. Like, man is not naturally forced to sin. There's nothing wrong in the equipment that God gave us that just has any tendency towards. It's not like having a mind like gravity. It just naturally goes into the gutter. The mind doesn't naturally go into the gutter. It ethically goes into the gutter. Am I making some sense there?
Well, I've always thought ethic was a learned influence, like culture and your ethnicity and your culture would be like an outside influence. So you're saying it's not who you are,
but what you do.
It's what you do
with who you are.
And the twisting would be from an external. Is that what you're getting at? Like a depravity would be something outside the person?
No. No. What they mean is the origin of sin is to be found in the will of the creature, not in the inherent makeup of the creature. In other words, God made man's will good. So it's not inherently sinful to have constitutionally a will, a mind, a heart, emotions, like those created constitutional realities that make us up who we are not inherently bad. So those make up our metaphysical being, like who we are. And ethics would be what we do with our metaphysical being. But that flows from the will, so it's not just outwardly. It's the will's inside, the heart is inside, the emotions are inside, mind's inside. So what we're making a distinction here, they are, is that the mind, the heart, the will, the affections, and emotions, these are not bad things inherently. It is the misuse of them that is bad. Now, some of these things are inward, some of them are outward, you know. But, the realm of ethics is attitudes and actions, you know, virtues and vices, you know, what we do with what God has endowed us with. What you thinking there, Mr. Ford? Give me a big eyebrow.
Well,
you keep going. I don't want to derail us.
Okay.
At the end,
Yeah, say it to the end. Someone, if we, someone get us a stopping point in terms of time, in case, because it's very, I may have written way more notes than what we will get through, so if we want to stop at a point to have.
It's
1:15. 1:15, okay. So there we were on the word nature. We're under number 4, the moral will of the creature versus the natural will of the creature. And when Jonathan Edwards says we're by nature evil, he is not meaning the mind is inherently evil, the will is inherently a wicked creation. Nothing like as a creature, we're not inherently evil. It is the ethical use, and therefore sin's an ethical issue. Origen saw this, and therefore he went prior to human existence and took Plato's idea of transmigration of the soul, that we existed sometime before our physical existence. And Origen said, well, we sinned with our wills then. So he was an early church father who, Frame said, the church fathers really church babies. You see why there. Pelagianism went the other way. Origen went before we were born. Okay, both of them are trying to avoid blaming the creation for sin. Now, Pelagianism goes all the way the other way and says we all individually fall ourselves. There's no prior anything that predisposes me to do anything. I have my own free will. I'm born neutral, and I decide good or evil, what to do. The whole premise is to try to, again, escape some prior disposition, which would then be attributed to the Creator as the blame for sin. Semi-Pelagianism, another word you want to know, is basically the halfway house. It's pretty much modern-day Arminianism. They believe in some kind of connection to Adam, some kind of predisposition, but it's not a crippling predisposition. I still ultimately make the final choice, and it makes it harder on me, but I still ultimately make the final choice. Augustine went in the middle and said this whole thing originates in the will of Adam. That's the origin of sin. That's the creature it began with. That's where everything we experience flows from. And that became the reform position, which is obviously, as we said, code for the biblical position.
Who are you referencing?
Augustine. Calvin, Luther, Edwards, Sproul, all these men followed Augustine, seeing the origin of sin in the will of Adam. Number 5, some biblical versus unbiblical explanations. The origin of sin and evil. The free will theodicy, little letter A, doesn't understand the problem. Free will theodicy, theos, God, dikaiosune is Greek word for justice or righteousness. Theodicy is a justification of God for problem evil. Free will theodicy says evil exists in the world because God endowed man with free will and he chose to use it that way. It will typically say it has to be that way for love to be true love. It has to have free will. That doesn't answer the problem, as Edwards showed in Freedom of the Will book, because good affections precede and are the basis of good actions. Evil affections are the basis of and requirement for evil actions. The ultimate enigma of the problem of evil, then, is not, that's what the free will defense misses, it's not the act. The moment Adam's will desired evil, he was a fallen creature. Before he acted, the affections had fallen already. And the mystery in the riddle is, how does a creature with good affections suddenly begin to have bad affections? That's the mystery of the problem. And that's the free will defense misses. If they say it didn't flow from affections, well, then it was an arbitrary decision and you've ruined free will. So the question just self-destructs. It's not an answer. There's the temptation theodicy, try to get us away, like, well, we were tempted, you know. And you say, well, the real question is the angels. How do they sin? They weren't tempted. They fell inwardly. We fell outwardly. But that, again, still misses the problem. I could have nasty catfish cheese hanging in front of me right now. It wouldn't matter. I don't desire it.
You're not a catfish.
Exactly. Even if Satan was tempting, God can't be tempted because he's righteous. So a holy creature would find the very idea of sin repulsive, make you want to vomit. So the fact that we were tempted by Satan outwardly doesn't explain it. You still have the question. Some guys go the mutability theodicy, still doesn't understand the problem. They come close to blaming it on creation. Well, man's changeable. And it still doesn't matter. Man used his free will to allow that change to take place. So you're still left with the question of how did the affections change? This view leads to, it's just part of life. You hear people say it, it's just part of life. Death isn't, it's part of life. It's human to sin. It's not human to sin. We think it is. It's not human to sin. I mean, Jesus was human. Adam was human. Those are all attempts of us to evade responsibility, is what they are. Little secret attempts. I don't know how many other of these to mention. I'll mention the illusion theodicy. It's what you find in Hinduism and Christian Science, that evil is an illusion. Well, that doesn't work, because the problem is, why would God play with our emotions with such an illusion? You know, it turns God into the ultimate Halloween scarer who doesn't ever tell us, he's just picking on us.
Yeah.
So who would pick on someone and watch them blow their brains out and never tell them and stop them? Hey, I was just picking.
Yeah,
I mean,
just a magic show.
Yeah. So, if evil is an illusion, evil's not an illusion. In other words, this self-destructs. But this is Hinduism, just so you know. there's the interpretation theodicy you find in ancient Greek philosophers, the Stoics. It's in the modern day movie Collateral Beauty. You just need to look at the world rightly. You know, there's good, enjoy the small things, people say. You know, someone's bleeding and evil and pain over here, and somehow the theodicy is, I just really need to learn how to enjoy a cup of water, like the good things in life. Obviously, that doesn't sell very well. There's the ignorance theodicy. Socrates thought that. The modern education movement is that, you know, awareness is the big word. You know, if we just made man aware of how to act, you know. So again, all these are avoiding the ethical problem. There's the evolution explanation for the origin of the evils, leftover animalistic desires. They can't answer it because you ultimately end up blaming creation again. Rome, the Roman Catholic, they use this concupiscence word, and again, get very close to blaming it on desire. You know, not to mention that many sins are inward and not of the attitude, you know, not the physical, sexual sort, pride, arrogance, stuff like that. That view leads to asceticism, you know, but we take our hearts with us to the mountain, take our sins with us. Leads to all of that, death being a liberation. Y'all have all heard people that have these things get said. And the assumption is, if it's true, if desire is the problem, all the old people would be holy. You know, I mean, when you get 90 years old, I mean, you just, you're out of Romans 7 and you're good to go. Yeah. The devil would be holy. He don't have a body. You know? He should be holy. If that's source of sin. But that's Rome. I hope you see now where, like, if you trace this, if you start blaming something in the creation, you end up Buddhist. You end up saying desire is the problem, and the next step past that is existence is the problem. Somehow, evil becomes a necessary, unavoidable, sad thing to reality. It's just part of it. Any of that language you start hearing, it's just part of it. Y'all have heard it. You hear it. I mean, that statement, that seed, if it's watered, turns into Buddhism. Because it embraces this inherent, natural, and I mean, the next step from that is God's existence is the problem, because He's the one that thought this whole thing up. If He wouldn't exist, then there would have happened. You see?
You're saying, like, when you hear this lingo, that's just part of life. I mean, I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot. It's just part of life.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Ups and downs.
What are you going to do?
That goes all the way back to Buddha.
And you hear it when people say it, they're pessimistic. It leads to pessimism. I guess so. Like, it's just part of it. Can't do anything about it. So that leads to the next, number 6, redemptive versus destructive effects in life. It leads to libertinism. It's one, you know, it's whatever. It's live however, whatever. It's all pessimistic. It's all. And it leads to suicide. to go ahead and get out of here. So you blame nature somehow. That's why it's so critical to say, when we say man is by nature evil, we don't mean created nature. We mean ethically. Because otherwise you blame nature, and it's a small step to blame God who created nature. And then you're blaming God. You're blaming God's nature. His nature somehow led him to do all of this. So really the best thing for all of us if God would commit suicide. That's where it logically leads. And that's what nirvana is, the extinguishing of the flame. Like the goal, the redemption in Buddhism is for everybody to go out of existence. It is literally suicide is salvation. Schopenhauer, the philosopher, called it the noblest of all acts. And I hope you see by the logic here that, like, although that sounds crazy, if you accept this, that is where it leads. So it is so critical to get you have to have a category of mysteries, or you derail. You just did. Edwards couldn't answer it. Sproul couldn't answer it. Augustine couldn't answer it. Aquinas couldn't answer it. I don't have any vain ideas that I would answer it. Somehow, we have to say God is the unchargeable. This is from John MacArthur, this lingo. God is the unchargeable cause of sin. He brings it about, but in such a way that he's not blameworthy of it. And that's where we get the two wills of God. You know, like the Arminians and Pelagians like to use the word permit. But what they mean by permit is the will of God had nothing to do with it. And so Augustine used the word willingly permits. Is that we got to safeguard the sovereignty of God and the righteousness of God. And you'll see confusion over the terminology. People are just grappling. Like a lot of Reformed theologians try to safeguard the righteousness of God by saying he's not the author of sin. Actually, Calvin used the word both ways. But you'll find, like, if you say God's the author of sin, he'd be called a heretic by most of them, because that's how they understand it. But I think we should have some kindness with each other when grappling with what words to use. I mean, MacArthur really nailed it the best, that God is not the chargeable cause of sin. So the ultimate answer to the problem of evil is how can a righteous being, whether it be an angel or it be a creature, move from having holy affections to unholy affections? How? Somehow. And if we don't like that answer, then we will end up thinking it's best if God would commit suicide. Or else we're just not thinking logically. Because that is where it logically leads. So.
Go ahead, Mr. Ford. Let's derail.
Yeah, they hit us
we're
up.
We're at the station. It's God's turn.
Well, I think if you get this wrong, you're going to cripple your whole worldview is off. If you get your whole worldview off, and a lot of folks have done that, but I think if you look at it from, you look at what is sin, okay, and most people don't want to admit that maybe they even is sin. Does that even exist? What is that? you talk to him today, that a lot of people don't even admit that there is such a thing as sin. Then if you look at, even though it don't use the word, but in chapter 3 of Genesis, you look at, is everything but mentioned in there where sin actually, I hate to use the word, originated or started there. Then Romans 5:12, I believe it is. You look at those verses and start to see that sin and the answer, I wouldn't dare go against John by no means, because I believe in what he articulates in his view of it. But man is, if you don't see that man is not worldly, it's not the everything, when the fall happened, everything that exists from nature that exists today,
right,
is because of sin and the fall. Everything. It don't matter whether it's what it is. If you look at it, it all comes from the total depravity of sin. So it all from sin. Everything. It don't matter if it's political or what area you want to get into. Mm-hmm. Whatever's wrong in the world, they want to blame on something else. It's just, it's sin. And death, sickness, I mean, you just go in any direction you want to go. Emotional, or whatever area you take, it all goes back to the sin and the fall. So, we are afraid, or we want to admit that, or don't want to admit it.
Yeah, it is amazing how far you swing depending on how you answer this.
It's a unique view even. Here in a kind of a more Christian influenced area that we're in, to have a view that like it's not supposed to be that way. Like you keep like this little phrase of like that's just part of, I've just been thinking about that. Like I hear that all the time. It's just part of it. But to respond with like, well, it's not supposed to be that way. Like you can really empathize with whatever somebody's struggling with, you're acknowledging like it wasn't designed to be this way. And if you don't say that, you just paint over this person's problem with just like whitewash. Just like it's just part of it. Just covered.
There's no redemption.
No redemption.
There's no recovery.
And they think they're encouraging people when they say that. They think it's like they'll sit by them in the hospital bed. It's just part of life. You know, sometimes stuff happens. Yeah. Person sitting there wrestling with like, I'm the one, you know, about to die, I guess, you know. It's a big stick the stick into the bicycle spoke to come in with that word and say, no, it's not supposed to be this way. You know
the thing is, if you don't, Jay Adams, who's the Christian counselor guy, responsibility is a source of hope when you think about it, because if all this stuff is just happening and I'm not the one doing it, it's just all happening to me, well, there's nothing I can do about it. But if it's because of me,
then you're
but if it's because of me
yeah.
that this is happening, well, then, and I'm responsible, well, then I can change. I can repent. I can change my behavior. I can do... it's changeable. It's redeemable. It's recoverable. There's hope in accepting responsibility. That's why these other views, I mean, they literally, there is a whole religion. It should blow our minds. One of the largest world religions is, let's just all go out of existence. You can't get a more pessimistic view of the world than to say salvation is non-existence. It's like a nice form of involuntary suicide.
Drink the Kool-Aid and let's just all go out and get them.
I know a lot of Buddhist green cards, I take it.
What?
Not a lot of Buddhist green cards.
Oh.
not a place for that at home.
I texted Jeffrey, Casey's parents' pastor that retired a couple years ago. Been a minister his whole life. He's like 80 years old. And killed himself about 2 days ago.
80 years old?
Love y'all. Minister.
Love you. 80 years old.
Shot himself.
And was he dealing with health issues? Was it just...
His wife was sick. And I think that was... He sent letters out to people. He wrote a book, sent copies out, like a kind of an autobiography book of his ministry and stuff. And then, like, everybody got all this stuff in the mail, and he found out, like, next day or two he shot himself. But, anyway, just a lot of stuff he was saying is, like, if you don't have these doctrines, I'm trying to think of where he may have went wrong, you know, what... Would not.
At what point he took his eyes off of?
Yeah.
I think it's back what we were talking about Sunday. I mean, suicide is a very selfish act. Mm-hmm. You know, selfish. Actually, you don't know where, at what point he derailed, where he was, all his hope was in one thing, and then it.
The doctrine in life.
Hmm.
I saw something the other day that was a musician, a Christian musician, that one that was in a, if you want to say, a reformed type. It's the Indelible Grace. You know, one of the guys that has been a part of that, Derek Webb. Somebody posted the other day, he did an interview, basically said, I no longer, as far as trusting Christ, I believe that. And just, you know, at what point does one that is as seems as stable as that just completely looks at it and go, that's...
Yeah. I used to be the biggest Derek Webb fan you ever know.
I figured that. Well, that's why I want to say something. Yeah, I saw some of my CDs.
Caden was calling.
Yeah.
Lead singer Caden.
But if you go back and actually look, I know that I hadn't followed him but from afar, but had noticed he started getting this sort of... After Caitlin's call, he started getting this whole dark sort of, I'm a Christian, but, you know, I kind of go a little more political. From that to, he was married to another musician that recently they divorced because of an extramarital affair. And now this is the end. This is where...
I didn't realize he told me to let go.
I just saw that the other day. It was some reform group that interviewed him, and he just basically said that. But what was funny or disturbing was he was saying that he no longer had faith in Christ, but yet that he didn't agree that he agreed that wasn't a good idea.
He did what?
He agreed that wasn't the people that hold that view or that it's wrong, but yet that was his view, right?
Sound like something.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I tweeted him one time, I asked him if he was a Christian. He didn't respond.
You didn't know that you were a Twitter?
Really, no, I just used it a couple of times. Mm-hmm. The reason I was saying about that ethics thing, which you cleared up at the end, and was in my anthropology classes, they always connected the word ethic and ethnicity was based on was a totally external, you know, like I'm from the South, it's like their view is there's no real such thing as race, there's just different ethnic groups.
Oh, yeah, no. This word, ethic, would not be connected to ethnicity. So that would be a mix-up on terms.
Yeah. He's using it in a different way.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I was...
I get it now, why you're thinking that way earlier. I was trying to figure that out. It makes sense.
Well, thank you. You really get to looking at how you define sin, or how... sin is defined. People won't think it. People are really good at heart. All people are good. Sin is negative, it's bad. We don't want to admit it or even know it's there. It is. So if we can push that away, then we can essentially put God away and we can be our own God.
Right.
So that's essentially what
if sin exists, then I may be a sinner.
Yeah. I might not be good.
Yeah, it is.
And I think I'm good. So.
Yeah, it probably better to be in light of that that you brought it up. Probably better to go with the word moral instead of ethic.
Right. Ethic just makes me think of an external influence.
Moral issue. So I think that's what Edwards did, moral versus natural. You know. Yeah, it makes sense. All of them. I mean, in the end, I can't think of a more blasphemous conclusion to come to, really, than to say, God, if you would shoot yourself and go out of existence, you know, that would cure it all. I mean, that's, you can't no more, that's the height of blaming God for everything.
Well, you really think about it, sin is probably one of the greatest gifts that we ever receive.
You're going to have to explain that. You went millennial on me on this one. You're going to have to explain this paradox.
Well, without sin.
Hey, let's put this on Mark.
Without salvation, you wouldn't have eternal life.
Yeah.
So, if you look at it from that perspective,
I think it's what places us above the angels. I know we talked about that before. You know, redemption, death, like angels. You know, I just try to thought that was such a new thought to say, you know, we'll judge the angels, we'll be above them just because. See, I'm talking about that before. Like with seeing, like angels have never died before. We'll cross the Jordan, and that's the only possible for sin, you know, that we go through that. Resurrection, resurrection, bodies.
I need to get where you're at, Mr. Corey, in a pretty good spot.
Well, I had to ride. Don't ever.
You have me. If you're calling sin your greatest gift, you're. Well, I'm still kind of bothered by it.
Without.
Oh, you're right.
Sin, you know,
you're right.
I'm
without that light.
You want to put some subheadings
in You even put that, some adjectives in there. Greatest gift.
Well, I'm just going to have it.
I'm going to talk to Ron.
Let's put it in.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know your wife.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, can I play
Ford.
Sing the greatest gift. Nick Arthur may have something to say about it.
I thought that was a good way of saying it. MacArthur had God's not the chargeable cause. Mm-hmm. That was pretty good.
Yeah, that was. He's always pulls one out. The ninth inning, he gets a home run.
What are we going to do with MacArthur?
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Well,
something hit me was talking about the pessimistic view, and, you know, that's just part of life you hear. I was like, man, that's like ultimate parenting fail when you're like, life's not fair. Like, your kids, like, I've done that before.
Yeah.
Rather than taking the time to just explain, you know, what to look like.
Just deal with it.
Not everything in life's fair.
That's right. We're out of popsicles. Deal with it.
Basically, what you're saying is, this is part of life.
He now knows it's a gift.
Yep.